Well, I'm sure that we've all seen them, the various pictures and things that go around the internet, or maybe saw them before in print, and what is it that you first see? And so when you look at that, let's do a couple. What do you see? A witch? You got to say loud.
A woman.
A guy on a saxophone. A woman. Which you see first? Who saw the saxophone first? Who saw the woman first? Ah, mostly the sax. Okay, next one. Hey, kids at home, this one's especially for you, so maybe a little easier. What do you see? You see what? Fish eyes. Fish, okay, so you see some fish. What else do you see? A face, a woman's face, right? You can see that. All right, the next one is the toughest one that I found. What do you see? How many see a duck? Yeah, that's what I saw first. And what else do you see? A rabbit. Who saw the rabbit? Anyone see the rabbit first? Look at that. A couple of you saw it. It took me forever to see the rabbit. So good for you guys. You got that whole thing. It's a whole bit about what is it that we see first. Now, if you're at home or if your kid here, even you might want to draw yourself a picture and see if you can draw some kind of a picture of Jesus where we see a couple of things and see if your mom and dad can see both things that you have. All right, we're coming now to the last part of a series of five controversies that Jesus found himself in with the leaders, with the Pharisees in particular, and scribes. The first controversy had to do with them forgiving a paralyzed man's sins and the ability or the authority that Jesus had to forgive sins. The next one had to do with eating with sinners. And Jesus is bringing about the gracious reconciliation between God and people and those who are sinners. And then the last controversy we looked at was Jesus about fasting. And Jesus saying, no, my disciples don't fast because the bridegroom is here, the kingdom has arrived, and your wineskins can't contain the level of grace that's going to burst those wineskins because this new king with a new kingdom has come on earth. And now we come to the final two controversies that Mark sets up that very, very early, Jesus is in opposition to those who were the established leaders of the time. And they are two disputes over the Sabbath. The Sabbath. The Sabbath. Now, at the heart of these disputes is the question of what people, including us, see. What do we see? What do we see first? And what do we see that's perhaps a little bit deeper, that perhaps lies a little bit under the surface at first and yet is really the great truth that Christ is trying to put out for us? What is it that we see? Well, as we read these two controversies, I mean, first of all, note how we see laws, freedom, and lordship. Okay, laws, freedom, and lordship. Keep your eye open for these three things as you read the last part of the Gospel of Mark, chapter 2. Here we go, beginning with verse 23. One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and his disciples walked along. They began to pick some of the heads of grain. The Pharisees said to him, "Look, why are they doing what is unlawful to do on the Sabbath?" He answered, "Have you never read what David," that's King David, "have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need? In the days of Abiathar, the high priest, he entered the house of God and ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for the priests to eat. And he also gave some to his companions. Then he said to them, 'The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And so the Son of Man is Lord even over the Sabbath.'" All right, what do we see? Well, the first thing that is very obvious that people saw right away, the Pharisees, are the Sabbath laws. Now, it's very, very important that we understand that it's almost impossible to overstate the importance of the Sabbath laws for the Jewish people. It began Friday night at sundown and went all the way through Saturday until the sun went down and then. And they were fundamental identity markers. They kept the Sabbath because God commanded it. First of all, as a proclamation that God is the creator. and therefore the owner of everything. The earth is the Lord and everything therein. It's okay. And the Sabbath said, God created. And at the end of creation, he rested. Now, because God is the creator, there's some implications for the Jewish people and some implications for us. Number one, as creator, the Sabbath proclaimed that God is the life giver. He's the one that brought life about. And so the Sabbath said, yeah, life comes from God. And when we keep Sabbath, we say that Yahweh, our God, gives life. Not only does he give life, but he provides for life. And we can take the Sabbath off, and we don't have to be afraid. And we can take a day of rest because we trust that God is going to provide for us as his people. And so we don't have to worry and stress and knock ourselves out and kill ourselves like the other nations, because God is our provider. So first of all, they kept the Sabbath. Old Testament law, right there from Genesis, on the seventh day God rested, because God is the creator, therefore he is the life giver, therefore he is the provider, therefore we can rest. But the second reason was equally important for the Jewish people. We kind of forget it because it's not as critical for us, because we sort of, you know, don't live in the milieu that they did. But the second reason that the Jewish people kept the Sabbath was that God said, keep the Sabbath to remind you of the Exodus. The Exodus. That's when God brought his people out of Egypt. Remember that whole thing, you know, with Moses and the Red Sea and the plagues and all that kind of stuff. And so the Sabbath, the Jews were commanded, keep the Sabbath to remind you of the Exodus and to remind you that I am your rescuer and I am your king. Pharaoh and his ways are the oppressor and not the king. I rescue you and I am your king and I make you my people. I enter into covenant with you. I say that you are mine, and when you keep the Sabbath, you are saying that, yes, we are yours. All right? Very, very, very important that the Jewish people kept the Sabbath. God is creator, life-giver, and provider. The Exodus, God is rescuer and king, and we are his people. This law was so important for individuals. If you broke the Sabbath, it was the death penalty. And Ezekiel told Israel, for you as a nation, the reason that you're being taken into captivity, the reason that we're in captivity, the reason that Israel went first and Judah called them through, is because you're not keeping the Sabbath. Because you see, when you don't keep the Sabbath, you don't proclaim that God is creator. You don't proclaim that God is life giver. You don't proclaim that God is a provider. You don't proclaim that God is a deliverer. You don't proclaim that God is king. You don't proclaim that you are God's people. You actually are breaking covenant. Fundamental. Fundamental. One of the biggest identity marker for the Jews was keeping Sabbath. Dietary laws. Circumcision, keeping the Sabbath. Critical things that the Jews did to proclaim these things. Now, the Pharisees, with their growing antipathy and enmity towards Jesus, see the followers of Christ, and they're walking through the grain fields, maybe on their way to synagogue, I don't know, and as they're going through, they're picking for themselves a little bit of a snack. They're picking for themselves a few heads of the grain and eating them. And what they see, the Pharisees, they see people breaking the law. They're breaking the law. And they also see an opportunity to attack Jesus. Here are these followers of Jesus breaking the law. This is our chance to get him. Because you see, a rabbi was responsible for what his followers did. And so they come to Jesus and they say, hey, here's an opportunity for us to attack you. How is it possible that you are allowing your followers to break one of the fundamental laws of Israel, one of the fundamental proclamations of who God is and who we are as God's people? How is it you're allowing him to do this? That's what they see. Lawbreakers and a chance to attack Jesus. But we can also see in Jesus' reply a strike for freedom. And honestly, I think that that's what most of us kind of see, first of all, what Jesus does, it's kind of interesting. He reaches back into the history of Israel. And he pulled up a time in the life of one of the heroes of Israel, King David. Now, what had happened, you can read about this in 1 Samuel chapter 21. Now, back in chapter 16 of 1 Samuel, Samuel had already anointed David as king. He was already the anointed king. In other words, he's saying, this is what's going to happen. You're going to be king. In fact, in God's sight, you already are. But King Saul, he was still on the throne. As you remember, King Saul got very jealous of David and plotted to kill David. And, you know, Jonathan warned him and all this kind of thing. And so David ran away from the palace of King Saul. And as he was running away, he needed food. And so he went to the high priest at Nob, where the tabernacle was. And he said, hey, you know, I'm on my way. Do you have any food for us? And Jude says, well, the only food we've got right now is the showbread, the bread of the presence, this offering which had to be before God all the time and kept fresh. And then when it wasn't fresh anymore, then the priest would get to eat that bread, but they could only eat it in a holy place. That's the only bread I've got. And King David says, I tell you what, give me that bread then. And even though it's against the law, even though the law says only the priest should eat this bread, the priest gives David the bread, and David eats it and gives some to other people as well. David breaks the law. The Sabbath, then says Jesus, was made for people, not people for the Sabbath. Not people for the Sabbath. In other words, what Jesus is saying to these Pharisees is that, listen, you are using the law, which is intended to be a blessing, as a bludgeon to oppress and punish and keep people under control, and are using the law as a weapon instead of a blessing. Don't you understand that the law is just intended to be an organized way of delivering blessings to God's people, and you're using it for the opposite of that? Don't you understand that human need supersedes the laws of the Sabbath? Because the Sabbath were given in part for the sake of human need, that you would have rest. Now, some of us have escaped legalism. Some of us were raised where the leaders of the church, the leaders of the faith, the leaders of the land, whatever it is, use the law, use the commandments of God as a bludgeon, as a weapon, as something used to punish people, as something used to crush people, as something used to keep people down. And so you see in these words of Jesus, listen, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. The Sabbath is used to bless people. It's not for people to just live under the curse of the Sabbath. And you see in this action and in these words of Jesus a proclamation of great freedom. Great freedom. That the message of Jesus is a message of freedom. It's a message of grace. It's a message of blessing. It's a message of goodness. It's a message that rejects the use of God and his kingdom and his laws and his word and his ways to bludgeon and to control and to abuse. It's a great proclamation of freedom. And in this we find goodness. But it's not the main point that Jesus wants us to see. What Jesus wants us to see above all else in this event and in his answer to these Pharisees is that Jesus is Lord of all. Lord of all. You know, if you think about it, Christ's answers are kind of weird. They're kind of strange. I mean, here they come and they ask him, hey, Jesus, you know, what about this Sabbath law? What about this law that people are supposed to keep the Sabbath, and your disciples are eating this grain and they're breaking the Sabbath? Now, you'd think that Jesus could answer the Sabbath thing right away, because there's a couple of things that happen here. Number one is it's not even certain that the disciples were breaking the Sabbath laws. Because you see, the Sabbath law is where you can't reap. Well, is plucking the odd thing of grain and rubbing together the chaff and munching on a few kernels, is that reaping? Is that work? And so there'd be a lot of rabbis even who would say that they were not working at that time. And not only that, But there were also rabbis around that time. Jesus is not the only one that says that the Sabbath is for people, not people for the Sabbath. And so Jesus could have answered their question by saying, come on, guys, let's talk about the law. Let's talk about what God means. This isn't reaping. This isn't working on the Sabbath. This isn't doing this. Even some of your own rabbis would say that it's not reaping. And not only that, he could have gone into that whole thing and debated the finer points of the Sabbath law. But he doesn't. He tells this story about King David eating the bread of the presence from the tabernacle. How does that connect? Why is it that he uses that as the argument against the Pharisees? I'll tell you why. It's because what he's angling towards is that King David is a more important person, and his mission is more important than keeping the law of the tabernacle. He starts talking about King David because what he's going to say is, I'm the Son of Man, and I am the Lord of the Sabbath. What he in essence is saying in the story is that, listen, a greater king than King David is here. A greater kingdom than David's kingdom has arrived. And a greater mission than David's mission is taking place. And a greater person to bring about that mission is arriving here. I'm the king that's greater than King David, and my kingdom has arrived. And the Sabbath belongs to the Lord. The Sabbath is the Lord's. Everyone understood that you are to keep God's Sabbath. And David is a great king, but I'm a greater king, says Jesus, because I am Lord. I am Lord of the Sabbath. The Sabbath belongs to me. Who does the Sabbath belong to? God. God. And for those of us that have the eyes to see later on when Jesus shows himself more fully to be God, then we read back and we see that this is one of the times that Jesus is actually claiming to be God. When he says, I am Lord of the Sabbath, he's actually saying, I'm greater than King David, I'm the great king, and the reason I'm the great king is because I am God. And everything that the Sabbath means, life giver, provider, rescuer, keeper, kingdom builder, people rescuer, people that enter into covenant with me. Everything that the Sabbath is, I am that for all people who will trust in me. So what do we see? What do we see? And the first application is, of course, freedom from legalism and the law and oppression and all of those different things. And to understand that the law, the words of God, is given as an organized way of giving people blessing. But the main point is, do we see Jesus as our God, our King, our ruler of our life? And have I, in fact, made him Lord of my life? Because if I've made him my King, my Lord, if I look to him for all of those things that Sabbath means, then surely I must begin to see things as my King sees them. And it's this contrasting vision that Jesus begins to double down on and apply in the first six verses of chapter 6. Look at how people have contrasting visions in these few verses. Another time, Mark puts them together because he's trying to bring this point together. Says, another time, let me tell you this story. Another time, Jesus went into a synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Some of them were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus. What do they see? So they watched him closely to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath. Jesus said to the man with the shriveled hand, "Stand up in front of everyone." Then Jesus asked them, "Which is lawful on the Sabbath to do? To do good? Or to do evil? To save a life? Or to kill it?" But they remained silent. So Jesus looked around at them in anger and was deeply distressed at their stubborn or their hard hearts and said to the man, stretch out your hand. And he stretched out his hand and it was completely restored. Then the Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians how they might kill Jesus, which is an amazing thing because the Pharisees hated the Herodians because the Herodians were supporters of King Herod, who was just a puppet of Rome that the Pharisees were supposed to be standing against. But their antagonism towards Jesus was so strong, they became allies even with their enemies. Well, did you see the contrasting visions? The Pharisees, those looking to accuse Jesus, had a very, very selfish agenda. And some were looking to accuse Jesus to see if he would heal on the Sabbath. A selfish agenda. The depth of their selfishness is just incredible. They don't see this suffering human being. Maybe they've ignored him the whole time as they were in synagogue with him for who knows, for years and years and years. But they don't see a suffering human being. What they see is a tool, a means, a way by which they can achieve their own ends. And in this, there's a bit of a challenge for us who are followers of Jesus. What do I look for in life? What am I out to see? Do I really see people? Do I really look for the needs of others? Or do I look for people as to how they can meet my needs? Do I look and do I see human beings created in the image of God? Or do I just see a means to my ends and my dreams and my goals and my objectives? People to be used to climb up to get where I want to go. Just bit players in this story of which I'm the central player. What do I see? Do I see people? Or do I see just how my agenda can be advanced? No, it's perhaps not as overtly or as sinister as the Pharisees and these rulers had, but it's so easy to see past people. You know, one of the good things about this coronavirus is a little bit more recognition of people who work in the service industries. Restaurants and grocery clerks and people that it's so easy to see past them and just get our stuff and go. And so one of the things that's good is that it's been lightened up that these people are human beings created in the image of God, that I have an opportunity to see that way and to treat that way. How do you see people? How do you see people in the complaint department? When you got to take something back and they took it home, the thing was a wreck and it cost you all kinds of money, and it's the third time you tried to put it together. How is it that you interact with that person on the other side of the counter who just has to kind of help you and decide whether you get your money back or repay? Are they a human being? I've been whining to you about my little fight with Amazon there that went on for an eternity, and every time I would just try to remind myself, this is a human being, this is a person, it's not the issue. How about the peace officer that pulls you over to give you a ticket? Is that a person? We had a very expensive month a few weeks ago because I forgot to pay for the registration on Sheena's vehicle. It's worse than that. I took care of my own vehicle and got registration. I forgot Sheena's. Sheena got pulled over. So I had a text from Sheena reminding me that I should remember that. But anyhow, how is it when that peace officer pulls us over? Even sometimes when it's our error, we're kind of ticked off at that guy or that woman. How is that? Do I see people? Or do I just see people that get in the way of my agenda or I can use to achieve my agenda? Do I see people? But Jesus sees even more than seeing this man with the shriveled hand as a person. He sees this as a life-giving opportunity. And he's furious at the religious leaders because they don't see this man who's created in the image of God as a person who's worthy of giving life to, who's in need, who needs some help. They see the Sabbath as a reason to give death. They plotted to kill him because he's going to break the Sabbath. And Jesus saw the Sabbath as a time to give life and to meet need. And so as subjects of the king, what do we see? Do we see people? Do we go beyond even seeing people and see the needs and see the help that's required? Do we do that? And then do we go further and offer ourselves up as perhaps channels of God's blessing, of God's healing, of God's provision, of God's life, of giving rest to another person? Do we, as subjects of the King, live with our Lord's sight? Do we see that? And do we act on that? You know, it's funny how when you're younger, images can stick in your mind and just kind of stick with you, even though they're somewhat common. When I, it was my first winter in Canada, so I was 12, so this is ancient history. I'll tell you how old it was. This is when the McLeod store was downtown Grand Prairie. All right, so this is a long time ago. I was 12 years old. And it was the middle of winter. This was a great shock to my family. We thought when it rained, it was cold. And this whole minus 30, minus 40, all this kind of stuff. And we're in the McLeod store. It was dark, so it was, you know, after 4 o'clock in the afternoon. In the middle of winter. Getting towards Christmas, actually. And we were huddled in there, you know, doing something. And then out on the sidewalk, there was a man who was drunk. And this guy, it was cold. I remember it was cold. I don't know what it was, probably minus 30 or something like that. And this guy, he had no gloves on. His coat was open. He was reasonably well dressed, but, you know, it was all open. He had no hat on. And the sidewalk was slippery. And so this combination of him being drunk and the ice on the sidewalk, this guy couldn't stand up. He'd try to get up, he'd slip down, he'd try to get up, he'd slip down, he'd try to get up, he'd slip down, he'd try to get up. So he'd hit his head, sometimes he wouldn't. And inside the store, there were 3 or 4 young guys. They're older than me, so looking, in my mind, they're like guys in their 20s or something like that. And they were standing at the window, and they were watching this guy, unable to get up, and laughing and joking and making fun. And so I didn't really think too much about that. I mean, I didn't notice this guy, I noticed these guys. And then this woman came up, just an ordinary person, shopper. She comes up out of the basement of the McLeod store. And she sees these guys standing there. And she looks out and she sees this fellow that can't stand up. And she sees these guys laughing at him and joking about him and all this sort of thing. And she walks up to them and she says, "What are you laughing at? That is a man. That is a man. That is a man who needs help. Why don't you go and help him stand up? That is a man." And then she walked off. It sticks in my brain as a 12-year-old kid seeing this woman stand up for the dignity of a human being who I suppose you could argue is in the spot he was in because of his own choices, blah, 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 blah. The eyes of the king sees a woman, sees a man, sees a need, sees an opportunity to be an instrument of God's life, of God's Sabbath, of his provision, of his rest, of his rescue. So here's an assignment. I'm going to try and remember to do it. We'll see. Hey, maybe some of you can put this in the chat if you're online here. You know, sometimes I invite us to take a time each day and to just kind of think. And so I just would invite you to see if you want to do this for the next 5 days. At the end of the day, just ask yourself these 4 questions, okay? Number 1, today, did I see people? People. Not instruments or obstacles, did I see people? Number two, did I see need? Big need, little need. Need. Did I see need? Did I see something in the eyes or in the face or in the circumstances of the people that I see? Some need in their life. Did I see the need? Number three. Did I offer life-giving kingdom intervention? Did I offer life-giving kingdom intervention? Did I say, Holy Spirit, how can I just bless this person? Maybe big way, maybe little way. How can I just bless this person who has this need? Did I see that life-giving kingdom intervention? And number four, did I become God's instrument? Did I become God's instrument? Did I become a channel, maybe even with something only as profound as a smile, but did I somehow become a channel to meet the need that I see of this person created in God's image? What do I see? With whose eyes do I encounter life? Almighty God, just this morning in my devotional time, I was reminded of how egocentric I am, how much my own life fills my vision. But Jesus, you didn't live that way. You saw people, you saw me, you saw us. You saw our need. You continue to see our needs. You have a heart to bring the realities of the Sabbath to this broken world. And you became the instrument to meet our most profound needs, and you continue to do so so well in our lives even today. God, by the power of your Spirit, give us your eyes to see this week. We pray through Jesus. Amen.